everybody, and welcome to the Cola Winner Show, a podcast where I, Cola Winnemeyer, talk about things that you probably don't want to hear. So sit back, relax, and listen. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Cola Winner Show. It's been about 3 years since I've put out the last one. I apologize for the long delay. I can't make any promises that there won't be another three-year-long delay either, but whatever. You know, this has never really been a serious effort. It's just for fun. So anyways, it's been a long time. I figure I'd actually try to do a topic, an actual show topic, and the topic that I'm going to do today is something along the lines of, have we been lied to about food? A lot has changed in my life in the past 3 years in terms of the way I perceive food in general, the way it's made, the way farming practices are done, the types of foods that we eat, what's available in our stores, the agricultural field in general. So I have some thoughts on this, and I don't have a whole heck of a lot of hard facts that I can point you to in terms of studies and so forth. It's not really quite how I work, but I do have a lot of information that I've gleaned over hundreds and hundreds of hours of podcasts that I've listened to, in addition to a lot of documentaries that I've watched, and you know, just general being able to piece things together that seem to make sense to me. A lot of it started with getting into this permaculture thing and learning more about how food works. Probably started with the original documentary that I watched called Food Inc. I think it's an excellent documentary for people to get to open their minds a little bit about how our food system is. We live in an era nowadays where it's against the law to even go onto a farm and take pictures. You can be prosecuted because you're a terrorist, I guess. I don't know. I don't really understand that. But, you know, food is now a secret thing. You know, food production is now secret. They don't want you to see how the animals are treated or how the food is actually manufactured. And I use the word manufactured because that's what it is. These are factory farms, you know, that you've heard that before, factory farm. Well, these farms that are out there producing our foods now are in fact just as mechanical as an assembly line that puts together a car. It's the same thing, and the animals are treated just as if they are inanimate objects, not worthy of respect in any way, shape, or form, and just treated abysmally their entire lives. These are creatures that are just bred for food, and they have no intrinsic value other than that. And I find that abhorrent. I don't like that. And even though I still to this day eat a whole heck of a lot of that food, I mean, I'm not in a position monetarily where it's easy for me to, you know, eat the foods that I would want to eat. But, you know, I'm always pointed towards that goal if I could. So when I say what I said earlier about have we been lied to about food, I think we have. There's a great documentary called Fathead, which is a rebuttal to I think it's Morgan Spurlock, his documentary called Supersize Me. Yeah, the documentary Supersize Me. Fathead is the rebuttal to that. Is done by a guy named, well, where is it? Fathead the film. Fathead the movie. Ah. I'm probably gonna have to edit this. I was hoping to be able to go through all this podcast just kind of one take and just go for it, you know. Anyways, Tom Naughton is the guy's name. He's a comedian and former health writer, according to his website, fathead-movie.com. Anyways, Fathead, this guy talks about what Morgan Spurlock set out to achieve is to show that you can eat at fast food places for 30 days and actually lose weight, or at the very minimum not gain weight. He accomplished this. He ate at McDonald's and other fast food restaurants for that amount of time. The conscious decision that he made at each one of those locations was not to order high carbohydrate meals. So he didn't order the supersized fries. In fact, in many cases, he didn't order fries at all. He didn't order the supersized Coke. He didn't order Coke at all. Maybe he'd have a water or something that was not sugar-based or high fructose corn syrup-based. And he showed that he lost weight. And this was a kind of an eye-opening thing for me because, oh, and he also proved that his, through his doctor, because he went to his doctor and had blood work done, and his good cholesterol went up, bad cholesterol went down. Overall, his blood cholesterol was better. So not only was he lighter in weight, but he was also healthier in terms of his blood cholesterol levels. Which was also kind of one of those things for his doctor that he didn't understand. Later on in the documentary, he shows that he went on a carb-free diet for another 30 days where he ate just, you know, his snacks, for example, was fried cheese. He just ate high-fat, high-protein diet for that entire time, and he lost even more weight and his blood levels were even better. So the movie Fathead really explains everything that I'm going to talk about today very, very well in a much more professional manner. I highly recommend that you watch it. It's fathead-movie.com. And I believe the whole entire thing's on YouTube. So, and it's on Netflix. If you have Netflix, you can watch it there. It's also, the whole entire movie is on YouTube for free. Worth watching. He points out that this guy named Ansel Keys, who was the Department of he was a food scientist during World War II. He helped develop the K rations and so forth. He, while he was trying to figure out how to make soldiers more healthy during wartime, you know, by giving them proper nutrition, he found what he believed to be a link between fat that you consume and fat on your body. It's called the Seven Nation Studies, I believe is what it's called. Seven Country Study. It's called the Seven Country Study, where he took a bunch, he did a bunch of research on these people's and then their diets and compared their obesity rates and so forth. And he concluded that eating high cholesterol, high fat diets made you fat. The fathead guy, I don't know why I can never remember his name, but the fathead guy, Tom Naughton, he points out in the Fathead movie that this particular study is flawed because what Keyes did was he took the data that supported his hypothesis and kept that in the study, while the data that did not support his hypothesis, he chose to leave out of the study. And when you take all of the data, all of the data points from what was collected in the studies, it would show that there's no reasonable link to high fat diets leading to obesity issues and health problems. It didn't prove either way. It didn't say that it didn't, you know, cause that or it did. It just basically nullified the study. Well, if another thing that he points out, hang on a second, I'm gonna cough. Okay, another thing that he points out is that Keyes had the ear of the politicians of the time, and they passed on their recommendations for the food pyramid, right? And I don't know if you remember our food pyramid. The bottom of the pyramid is it says you should eat lots of carbohydrates. You know, and the top, very top of the pyramid says you should eat very little fats and meats. So it's slanted towards eating a lot of carbohydrate-rich diet, eating a carbohydrate-rich diet versus a high-protein, high-fat diet. I believe that this is politically motivated. And I believe this is politically motivated due to World War II. There's another really great series on YouTube called Wartime Farm. Wartime Farm. And it's a story about a farm basically what these guys do is they recreate a farm life in period. So this group of people, they have a bunch of other series out there too. But Wartime Farm is very interesting in that it shows that during World War II, England was importing very little, or I'm sorry, like 60% or more of their food was coming onto the island of England. I mean, England is surrounded by water. Well, during World War II, the Germans and the Axis or whatever, they were through the U-boats and whatnot, they were sinking all these convoys of food that were coming onto England, and it was becoming apparent that if England didn't get their act together in farming and food production, then they would all be starving to death, right? America had a similar problem in that we needed to raise a lot of food as well. We needed to create up food production because we were feeding troops overseas. And in order to do that, in order for England to feed its troops and to feed its people, and in order for America to feed its troops and its people, we needed to revolutionize, and we literally did revolutionize the way farming was done in the world. Through the use of mechanization, we plowed up a lot more land than we ever had in history. And we could do it with a lot less labor because we had things like tractors now. So in England, what they did back in 1939, England was given subsidizing its farmers like £2 per acre to plow previously unplowed lands, and they plowed up like 1.5 million additional acres. You know, these new mechanized systems could plow in 3 months what used to take 3 years. So they just went through and just completely changed the landscape of England, and they did so in America as well because we had similar goals. So pretty much everything that I'm going to say about England right now also applies to America. I think though in England it was a little more life or death for them. Although same for us, but not nearly as bad as them. You know, they were going to starve to death. So the English government told these farmers, basically, and here's what happened in England. They said, look, we need to feed our troops. We need to feed them a bunch of food that can be transported and doesn't keeps very well. And it also, it not only does it have to keep very well, but it has to be high in calories as much as possible. So they plowed up everything and planted like crazy. And when they did, they destroyed the farm as it originally used to be. The original farms, you know, they were very bucolic. They had, you know, a typical farmer would have a cow, a pig, some chickens, horses. They would, you know, fertilize their they still plowed the land, which I'm not a big fan of, but whatever. This was a system that was in place. They would fertilize their plowed lands with, you know, the manures from their animals and whatnot. In England, what they had to do is they were given an order by the government to slaughter a certain percentage of them, a certain percentage of all the meat animals. So a certain percentage of all the cows and pigs and stuff had to be slaughtered to make room for the land that these animals would normally be on. So, for example, a cow would be kicking back on several acres worth of land, you know, or, you know, like 100 cow would be on, you know, 20 acres worth of land. Well, they wanted to take that land that was now being used for cows. They wanted to take it and use it for growing, you know, rye, wheat, barley, and other crops that were needed for the war effort. And so the cows were just literally taking up too much room. So they started concentrating these animals. They killed off a lot of them, concentrated what they had into smaller and smaller plots. This mentality persists to this day in terms of, Let's take the land and grow grain and pull the original pasture creatures and put them into small confined areas. And then, you know, we can grow grain on the land and then feed that to the animals. So the animals don't have to, look, we're doing them a favor. They don't have to walk around and eat grass now. They can just hang out in one spot, right? So they can hang out in one spot in concentrated feeding areas. Now we call those CAFOs. We've taken this to an extreme in modern agriculture, and we can bring the grain to the cow, and then we can haul out the manure, and we can do this all in a concentrated location, in a concentrated space, so that the farmers can now utilize more of their land to produce more and more and more crops. This is exactly what happened, and in doing so, they destroyed and are destroying to this day the natural ecosystem that once was in all these areas, where there used to be trees and woods and good natural biology and life and biodiversity and all that. Now there's nothing but flatlands and deserts, what I call deserts. They're not really deserts, but they might as well be deserts, in America especially, where most of the soil is completely destroyed and has to be artificially maintained through fertilizers and other chemicals. So this is what happened in England. They had to do this, and it happened in America as well. Well, fast forward, till after the war, we win the war. But the damage has been done. We can't really go back. So it's not like you can say to Farmer John, "Hey, Farmer John, it's all good now. Go ahead and plant some trees and take your cows and put them back on pasture." Well, he's completely seen a different life. So there's a statistic that I just recently read, and it says right here: by the end of 1941, farm income was higher than at any time since 1929. This is in America. Between 1940 and 1945, net cash income for farmers increased from $4.4 billion to $12.3 billion. And the average farmer went from a net income of over $700 to over $2,063. All right? So these farmers went from, earning $700 a year to now earning over $2,000 a year. And back then, that's a lot of money. They're not going back. They're not going to take the cow and put it back out in the field. They're not going to take the pigs and let them run around. They're not going to have the chickens run around and do their chicken thing anymore. They're going to continue doing what made them money between 1940 and 1945, in the past 5 years. All this technological innovation has just come into play. And I can't say I blame them. I just watch a crap load of videos here on YouTube, propaganda videos, obviously, for wartime stuff. And I'm watching these farmers, and I'm seeing how they could see that what they're doing is a good thing. And it makes sense in a short-sighted manner. And frankly, think about it. Everybody to this day, even yourself included, more than likely thinks short-sightedly. What's in it for me? What's in it for me now? What's in it for my family? How can I increase my productivity and increase my way of life? So I don't necessarily blame these farmers for doing it. I don't even blame the War Department people, but I do blame people today, because now we have a much better ability to go back in time and see where we've made a mistake and see the damage that has been done, and we can start fixing it and repairing these things with more natural systems. And I'll talk about those natural systems in a future podcast, probably. Suffice to say, permaculture is my favorite thing. Permaculture, if we can somehow figure out a way to make it happen, that would be the way to go. Anyways, so these farmers seen success. They're not going back. They're not going back. So what they did is they've continued to produce all these commodities. But now there's less of a demand for these commodities now, because they don't have to ship all this corn and wheat and rye and barley and all these things. They don't have to ship them overseas anymore. They don't have to, feed these troops. So what do they do? Well, we've already got this big, huge military industrial complex put into place. Let's utilize it. And so what they've done is, instead of shifting the consumerism over to the or the consumptionism, consumerism, yeah, over to the troops, they now shifted their marketing efforts and all their scientists towards the American public. And what we see after the war is we see lots of products hitting the market that are all wheat and corn-based, high starch-based products. So, we have all this corn. We've taken all these animals, we've moved them into small confinement areas. We need to raise feeds for them in the form of corn and grains and other grains to feed them. In addition, we're producing so much of a surplus of this corn that we can then take this corn, and through the miracle of science, we can process this corn into a myriad of products, ranging from everything from cooking oil to high fructose corn syrup, which was a by yeah just we've manufactured and we can make plastic. You know, I have a 3D printer and I print things out of a PLA, which is a type of plastic. I forget what PLA stands for, but it's a type of plastic made from corn. So our scientists have come up with ingenious ways for us to utilize this commodity and this product. Our farmers have become more and more specialized in producing this corn product. Corn is a big one. I mean, there are other ones, soybeans, wheat, canola, rapeseed. There's a lot of other products. I'm going to pick on corn for a little bit right now. There's a really interesting documentary online also called, not Food Inc., we just talked about that one. Well, King Corn is one of them. Yeah, Food Inc. also talks about the corn thing as well. Food Inc. and King Corn talk about how, King Corn's interesting. It doesn't talk about all the negativities of corn so much. It just talks more about how corn is being produced today, which is good. It's more of a non-biased type documentary, which is good to watch because it's so easy to get caught up in somebody else's bias. Anyways, King Corn and Food Inc. talk about, or Food Inc. mainly talks about the production levels, or how corn has really infiltrated our marketplace. Fathead talks a little bit about it as well. So I don't know if you know this, but cows have not been... Stop it, dog. Cows have not evolved to eat corn. Sorry about that. My dog was making way too much noise chewing on his bone. Okay. Hang on, pause. All right, I'm back. So cows have not evolved to eat grains. This is, is not news. It's not a big shocking thing. These are bovines. They have four-chambered stomachs for a reason. They have the ability to take grass, stick it inside their gut, and convert it into energy and meat and milk. Human beings cannot do this. We're not built this way. But they have a specialized stomach where they can do this. If you and I start eating grass, tomorrow, odds are we're not going to live long. It's not going to be very nutritious for us. But a cow has this wonderful ability, this wonderful, wonderful magical cow ability to be able to do this. And, I find this wonderful, right? So what we've done is instead of letting the cow eat grass like we used to do, and here's the reason why. It's not like we can't grow grass and feed it to them in the form of hay. We could do that. And that would be, order of magnitude better than what we're doing now. But the problem is, in 1 acre, I can grow only so much hay to feed so many cows. Whereas in that same exact acre, I can grow corn and feed a lot more cows. And that's what we do. We're all about economics, right? It's efficiencies and reward versus risk and whatnot, and I want to do the least amount of work and get the highest amount of results possible. And we've accomplished this in caloric, if we use calories as a measuring stick. I can get more calories per acre out of corn than I can out of grass, right? So that's what we do. We grow a whole bunch of corn, and then we feed it to our cows. We take our cows and we stick them to where, if you ever get online, open up Google right now and go and do an image search and look at CAFO, or even watch some YouTube videos at CAFO, K-A-F-O, K-A-F-O? I don't remember. Hang on, Google. I think it's K, but I don't think so. Maybe it's, no, it's C-A-F-O, because that wouldn't make any sense. Yeah. CAFO, Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation, according to the Sierra Club here, is an industrial-sized livestock operation. Wow, the quantity of urine and feces from even the smallest CAFO is equivalent to the urine and feces produced by 16,000 humans. That's crazy. So anyways, CAFO, Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation. We've taken all these animals and stuck them into one little spot and feed them corn because corn we can transport. Corn has high caloric value. It's a superfood. Cows were not designed to eat this. When they eat it, their four-chambered stomachs don't break it down the way it's supposed to be. They have a high bacterial a high bacterial content more in their guts than normal. They're susceptible to more diseases. One of the bacteria is E. coli. And the particular strain of E. coli that are in it that gets produced in a cow's gut when they eat corn is the one that's particularly deadly to us humans. So, something to think about. If we were to take cows and feed them grass, we would have less E. coli worries because cows were not made to eat corn. So these animals are susceptible to more illnesses because they're not healthy. If you feed a cow corn, it will die naturally. Just it won't live a full life. It will die prematurely. We kill them prematurely, so it's not really a problem for us because the cow's not much long for this world anyways. We're going to kill them. So we feed them corn. We end their lives before the corn has a chance to kill them, and then we eat the cows. The problem is that during this process, these animals are sick. They're sick. They're susceptible to more illnesses, more bacterial infections, E. coli just being one of them. And so what we do is we feed these animals antibiotics prophylactically, meaning every day. We just, you know, you're not sick, but in case you get sick, because I'm pretty sure you're going to get sick because you're living in really terrible conditions, you know, you're living in your filth all day long, you're probably going to get sick. So let's just give you antibiotics as a form of preventative medicine. I don't know if you are aware of the dangers in doing this with antibiotics, but it is extremely dangerous. If, for example, if you come down with a staph infection and your doctor gives you an antibiotic to take, and on the instructions on the bottle it says, you know, please take all of these pills until they are gone, regardless of how well you feel, and you take a few and 3 days later you feel, oh, I feel great. But you still have a half a bottle of antibiotics left. You decided, ah, screw it, I'm not gonna take anymore. I feel good. Why am I gonna bother, right? What's the point? So you don't take the rest of your antibiotics. What happens is the bacteria that continue to survive inside your body, and there will be a certain amount of bacteria that will survive inside your body. They have survived the onslaught of the antibiotic that you've given them, the penicillin or the amoxicillin or whatever it happens to be. They've survived that onslaught, so they are actually genetically tougher and stronger than their predecessors. And because you didn't kill off everything, they will multiply and pass on that genetic structure. This is evolution at work. Pass on that genetic structure to their offspring. And their offspring will be more resistant to antibiotics, to whatever antibiotic is that you gave them that made them stronger. So this is where we get superbugs from. Superbugs are antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So now your significant other or your child comes down with a staph infection, right? And you take that the kid to the doctor and say, hey, you know, kid's got a staph infection. Please, you know, can I get some more of that wonder drug antibiotics that you gave me? And doctor says, sure, here you go. Kid takes it, and nothing happens. Kid maybe gets a little tiny bit better. Nothing happens. Or maybe it gets worse. And the doctors are scratching their heads like, well, I don't know. I don't understand. This worked for you. Why isn't it working for, you know, little Jimmy here? Well, because poor little Jimmy, You manufactured a superbug for Jimmy. Your superbug is now inside of Jimmy and is slowly killing him. And if the doctors don't figure this out quick enough, little Jimmy could die from a staph infection. Something as simple and as preventable as a staph infection, or not preventable, but curable as a staph infection, can kill little Jimmy. So we, thank goodness, we have more and more different types of antibiotics that are out there, so we're able to hopefully find one that kills the staph and saves Jimmy's life. But because we were irresponsible in the use of antibiotics, we created a scenario where we're putting lives at risk. And that's exactly what we're doing with these cows. And it's not just cows, it's chickens, it's pigs, it's you name it, any kind of farm animal. You know, when you go to the feed store, they ask, would you like medicated feed? And no, thank you. I'll medicate my animals when they need medication. I'm not anti antibiotics in any way, shape, or form. They are literally miracle drugs. Without them, the human race would be considerably different today. Who knows? Maybe not even exist. I don't know. But it would be definitely different. A lot more dead people. Penicillin, amoxicillin, all these cillins, all these antibiotics have literally saved millions of lives over the course, ever since they've been invented. So if we don't have good, or if we don't put animals in scenarios where they're going to get sick all the time, we don't have to use a lot of antibiotics, then we have healthier animals. If we have healthier animals, we don't have to worry about E. coli so much. And if we don't have to worry about E. coli so much, maybe it'd be okay to have some rare hamburger. But right now you can't have rare hamburger because it, you know, 1 pound of hamburger may have as much as 10 different dead cows inside of it, and who knows how much fecal matter, which that fecal matter, E. coli, comes from that. You know, it comes out of that gastrointestinal system. So it's literally dangerous to eat raw hamburger. That's a travesty, right? So if I have a cow and I put it on a piece of property and I raise it healthily, I leave it on grass, I raise it healthily, I make sure it's fine and whatever. I mean, just like anything, sometimes things get colds. If it does get sick for any reason whatsoever and I treat it responsibly with antibiotics and bring the cow back to life and whatever, I can then slaughter that cow. And as long as I slaughter the cow in a safe, clean, sane manner, I could grind up some hamburger there and I could eat it raw. And there's a very small chance that I would get sick. There's still a chance. I wouldn't personally do it because I have no desire to eat raw meat. But if I wanted to, I could. That's the beautiful thing about doing agricultural practices correctly, is that it gives us the opportunity to have healthy foods that's healthy for the body and healthy for the society. But that's not where we're at right now. We're in a CAFO world where we have meat that is contaminated and tainted and so forth. And it's terrible. So rounding back around to my lies, coming back around, I kind of went off on a tangent there, but coming back around to where, you know, the food, why we've been lied to about food. We've put together this huge military-industrial complex that is completely an agricultural complex set up to feed human beings corn and other high carbohydrate items because they are incredibly profitable for us to do so. We can feed a lot of people, a lot more people on less and less land. The food pyramid is the beginning. The government-sanctioned food pyramid set forth, you know, school lunch programs and you name it, and all kinds of things, and ad campaigns on how to eat healthy. And they have told you from the very beginning that you should be eating lots of carbohydrates. Eat good bread. Eat cereal. Cereal every day for breakfast. You know, a nice glass of orange juice, which is high in natural sugars, which is still sugar. Have some carbohydrates, you know, with your breakfast. Just have a bowl of cereal and a donut, you know, or maybe a cruller, a cup of coffee, a cinnamon roll. Yeah, wonderful. This is not a healthy diet. This is not a healthy diet at all. The original healthy diet for the farmer used to be wake up in the morning, have some bacon and eggs. You know, and then maybe they eat some potatoes, some hash browns, but, you know, bacon and eggs, that was the healthy diet for the farmer. Farmers lived a long time. Now we eat cereals and you name it. Exactly. So what we get is government-sanctioned dietary guidelines that create obesity in people. And in Fathead, he goes through and he explains very well, in a very simple, easy-to-understand manner using cartoons, Tom Naughton does, on how carbohydrates are the reasons we get fat. There's a guy named Gary Taubes that wrote a great book called Why We Get Fat, which I highly recommend you read. It's not it's more of a scientific type style book, so it's not completely really easy to understand, but it's worth listening to. I do the audiobook. It's worth reading. I listen to it. It's worth reading. It's on audible.com. Get it. You know, I don't have any stake in Audible. Hopefully maybe one day I will, but right now I don't. Worth reading, Why We Get Fat. And they all talk about, it's all about carbohydrates. Carbohydrates are complex forms of sugar. Your body breaks them down into simple forms of sugar. Your body then takes those simple forms of sugar and stores them as fat in your body. Simple as that. That's what it is. When you have excess fat on your body, you have higher risk of diabetes. You have higher risk of heart problems. You have what they call metabolic syndrome, higher risk of metabolic syndrome. And not only that, it sucks walking around with extra fat on your body. You know, I recently lost 50 pounds. I switched to the paleo diet for myself. I'm not recommending you do that. That's just what I did. Do what you want to do. I don't care. But I lost 50 pounds and I'm lazy. I don't go work out. You know, I'm not a kind of guy who wants to go to the gym and run or pick up stuff, dumbbells, whatever. It's just not my thing. You know, I have better things to do with my life. So I just changed the way I eat. I shifted the ratio of carbohydrate to protein intake that I did. I shifted it. You know, let's just say it was an 80-20 ratio that I used to eat. 80% carbohydrates, 20% proteins. I just shifted that, proteins and fat. I just went 80% proteins and fat, 20% carbohydrates, and I immediately lost weight, noticeably within a month. It was insane. This is a couple years ago. I weighed 235 pounds. Right now I weigh right around between 180 and 185. So it's, you know, it's right around 50 pounds that I lost. That's a 50-pound bag of chicken feed that I don't have to carry around my body with me 24/7. It's amazing. I feel a hell of a lot better. I can run now and not be I'm going to die. No, I can run now and it's no big deal. I can chase a chicken around the yard if I have to, you know, and not feel like I'm going to die myself. So anyways, carbohydrates are what's killing you, right? It's what's killing America. There is a fantastic video on YouTube called, I think it's called Sugar, the Bitter Truth. There's another one called Fructose 2.0. I recommend you watching both of them, although they're very difficult to get through because this guy is an actual food scientist. Let's see here. Fat Chance, Fructose 2.0. Robert Lustig is the guy's name. And he is he's a guy from a University of California, Davis, I believe. He's an American pediatric endocrinologist at the University of California, San Francisco, okay, where he's a professor of clinical pediatrics. So anyways, this guy kind of got freaked out because he'd been doing this for many years. And he started noticing that kids were coming into his clinic obese already, fat, obese children. And he was noticing it in infants. And he's like, this is something wrong here. It's not the infant's fault that it's fat. And it's not necessarily the parent's fault that it's fat. There's something wrong with this child's diet or something or something wrong with the child genetically, right? But there's too many of them for it to be like genetic mutations. This was odd to him. He figured out that it was sugar. His first lecture is called Sugar, the Bitter Truth, and it's also on YouTube. I recommend you watch them both, although some of them is a little bit redundant. But he goes through and he explains scientifically what happens to the sugar molecule as it goes through your body, as it goes through your system, and shows you that it is sugar that is literally a poison. And it's giving you or creating all these social diseases that we have, or I don't know if they're social diseases, but this obesity epidemic. So I think we've been lied to by our government. I think this information, I believe, has been suppressed. You know, I'm not a huge conspiracy theory nut, although I love conspiracy theories. They're interesting. But I think that sometimes when there's smoke, there's fire, you know? So I believe that there's so much money in this field, so much money for the farmers. I mean, I just showed you that the average farmer in between 1940 and 1945 had like a four times or three times increase in their overall income. So why wouldn't they? Almost three times, from $700 a year to $2,063 a year in just the short stint between 1940 and 1945. Why would they ever go back? They have a vested interest in feeding you crap, because it makes them crap loads of money. And it's all about money. So this obesity epidemic, not only are we feeding the beast in terms of dollars for corn production, but we're feeding the medical industry, the big pharma industry, the pharmaceutical industry that set out to combat all these things, and the medical industry is making a killing on us in terms of I mean, you try to go to have a heart bypass surgery, see how much that costs you. You're talking insane amount of money to just have somebody open up your chest and fix things. I mean, not like that's trivial. I'm not saying it should be cheap, but it's insane. And then all the drugs that they put you on, the statins and all that stuff, to keep your blood cholesterol at safe levels. You know, I don't know how much it costs, because thank God I don't have to do it. But the money that's spent on all these damn pills, blood pressure medications and so forth, and high cholesterol medications, hell, and even antidepressants, if you think about it, if you think about, you know, healthy lifestyle versus your mental health, how much money is generated? It's billions and billions and billions of dollars. I don't have those facts in front of me, and I probably couldn't find them if I wanted to, but I guarantee you it's a crap ton of money that nobody wants to give up. You know, if I'm handing you $100,000 a year, and here I am, here's $100,000. Every year I hand you $100,000. And you realize that you found a way that I don't have to do that anymore? Are you going to tell me that? Are you going to go, hey, you know what, Joe? I know for the past 5 years you've been handing me $100,000 for this miracle little pill that's been keeping you alive, or we believe has been keeping you alive for the past 5 years. And, you know, I understand I've made $500,000 off of you already, and it's wonderful, and I really do appreciate all that money, but guess what? You don't have to do it anymore. You don't have to do it anymore. I figured out a way. All you have to do is just eliminate the sugary stuff that you eat, and reduce the amount of carbohydrate intake that you take, increase the amount of proteins, and increase the amount of fat, and it's going to save you that $100,000 a year. You don't have to pay it to me anymore. You don't have to do it. Aren't you happy? Do you think he's going to do that? Hell no, he's not going to do that. He just made $500,000 off of you. He's not going to tell you to stop. He's got a wife and kids. He's got, you know, if he's making that kind of money, he's probably got a bunch of kids and all kinds of different, you know, that all need to go to college, you know, and they all need brand new cars. And, you know, somebody's got to pay for their insurance, because kids nowadays can't be expected to do it themselves. So this guy, he's got bills to pay. He's not going to tell you, stop paying me money. You know, people, and I wish they were altruistic, but they're not. They're not. There are some people that would tell you to stop, and I would like to think that I'd be one of them. But I don't know, man. If you're handing me $500,000 every 5 years, I'd have a hard time telling you to stop. I really would. And that sucks, you know, because I'm in a position in my life right now where $100,000, hell, $5,000 means a lot. You know, so would I take the moral high ground? I would like to think that I would, but I might not. You might not be able to answer. You might be able to... You might be able to do it, and I hope to God that you're the kind of person that could do it, you know, but maybe you're not, and I don't think many people are. So what ends up happening is these doctors are making a killing. The farmers, not the actual farmer itself, but the big machine that is the farm, the big companies, Archer Daniels, Midlands, and so forth, the big food scientist companies, they're the ones making a huge amount of money. Unfortunately, it's backfired on the individual farmer. The individual farmer doesn't make crap anymore, really. But they never really have, unfortunately. It kind of sucks. Farming has never been a high income field. So they're getting the short end of the stick. You're getting the short end of the stick. We're getting fat. And the pharmaceutical industry is making a killing. The big agricultural industry is making a killing. The politicians are always making a killing because they're paid by all these guys, do campaign contributions and other types of underhanded, dirty, sneaky deals. You know, when we have government officials that are heads of companies, and they go back and forth between company and government position, you know, there's corruption there, and so they're benefiting from it. The only one that isn't benefiting from it is you. You know, it's like, what is it? George Carlin said, you know, it's one big club and you ain't in it. And that's true. And the quicker we realize that, the better. You know, we realize, hey, I'm not in this club. I'm not a part of this. I don't want to be a part of this system anymore, or a part of this machine. I mean, we're always going to be a part of it to some degree, because we're not just going to quit cold turkey. But we need to figure out better ways. And that's a topic for another day, man. I can't believe I talked this much. And I know my microphone has been clipping this whole time, and I've been kind of lazy about wanting to fix it. And I've got a lot of editing to do in this. I may not edit very much. This may not even be listenable. I hope it is. Give me some feedback. I'm not sure how I'm going to do that yet. I've completely changed the way ColoMono.com has been set up. So hopefully, by the time you hear this, there'll be some ways to leave feedback. Otherwise, if you want to, I'll set up an email. Yeah, this is what I'll do. I'll set up an email. Kshow, I think I set this up before. Kshow at ColoMona.com. So Kshow at KOLOM as in Mary, ON as in Nancy, A.com. Kshow at ColoMona.com. Send me some feedback, some info. If you want to talk shit and tell me how stupid I am, that's fine, whatever. I'll just delete it. But any input is probably better than no input at all whatsoever. Anyways, thank you for listening. And this has been a completely different type of ColoMona show than I've done in the past. More of a rant slash freestyle bullshitting. All right, I think I should end this now. Bye-bye. Down that dirt road to a house that's falling apart.